This is a HeadGum Original.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
One of the things that this podcast has accomplished, demonstrably, over the past 2 years, is that we are now the first search results that show up if you Google the words Tom Hanks and dead eyes, meaning that we have effectively replaced what used to be the first results. The 2004 Robert Zemeckis-directed, computer-generated holiday feature film, The Polar Express.
Get us the blazes out of here!
Through the magic of motion capture, it stars Tom Hanks as multiple characters. A little boy and his father.
Santa will be here before you know it.
So go to sleep.
A train conductor.
Ah, yes. Young man with all the questions.
A mysterious drifter.
Seeing is believing.
And even Santa Claus.
Patience. And a smidgen of humility might also serve you well.
Yes, sir.
People are always asking me to do an episode about this movie, because one of the main criticisms it received was that all of its characters have dead eyes. In 2011, The Guardian printed an article highlighting six of the worst aspects of CGI motion capture effects in cinema. Dead eyes was top of the list.
The defining aspect of a motion capture film is that at last it enables every character to have truly lifeless eyes. A film about a train driver who doles out creepy advice to children all day, The Polar Express led the way.
Even now, when you talk about dead eyes, The Polar Express remains a touchstone cultural reference. It's many people's go-to example, overshadowing the many ways that that movie was an ambitious advance in filmmaking technology. In April 2021, Band of Brothers star Jimmy Fallon was playing a game on The Tonight Show with guest Joseph Gordon-Levitt. They were making funny faces based on verbal prompts.
Oh, this is a good one. All right, let's do another one. This one is... Dead eyes.
Dead eyes.
Dead eyes.
Like dead, like I'm playing the corpse on
no,
NCIS.
No, I think just like...
They seem a little bit confused as to what the phrase specifically meant, but Jimmy pulled out the familiar reference.
There was that movie, the roller coaster, the Santa Claus roller coaster, where the Santa Express, maybe? Polar Express. They didn't really figure out the eyes in that one, so all the people's eyes were a little off, so... Get in that headspace.
I get the feeling that some people would really like us to do an episode dunking on the Polar Express. And I get it. I get the irony and the appeal. But I don't want to do that. I know how it feels to be criticized for having dead eyes. It feels bad. What I am interested in is the larger question at hand. If the Polar Express is the cinematic gold standard for the depiction of dead eyes... Does that mean that my eyes look like the eyes in that movie? And I'll go ahead and answer that. No, they don't. I've looked in the mirror, and I've seen what I look like on camera, and my eyes do not look like computer animation circa 2004. So then, what is the deal with my eyes? If not that, then what? What is it? What's wrong with my eyes? There has to be someone out there who can tell me what it means exactly to have dead eyes. Experts, specialists, or even just someone who is willing to be brutally honest with me. Because when I talk to most people, they go out of their way to try and reassure me.
You don't have dead eyes. You have such warm eyes.
And by the way, Connor, you do not have dead eyes.
You don't have dead eyes, by the way. You don't have dead eyes.
You don't have dead eyes.
But I have to say, I look in your eyes, they're not dead at all.
See, I think you have quite lively eyes.
I don't think they're lying, but they're biased. They're either friends of mine or... people who I've invited onto the podcast who are probably inclined to be sympathetic towards me. However, luckily, there is a person who, not too long ago, publicly went on the record and expressed an alternate point of view. Comedian Nikki Glaser.
It was like, you know, listed as like a podcast of the year. And I just heard the first episode the other night, but it's called Dead Eyes. And this guy was like, got his.
This is from her appearance on The Daily Zeitgeist in December 2020.
Like, oh, I Googled to see if he had dead eyes. And he kind of does. Like, oh, I see it in the pictures. They're a little bit sociopathic, a little bit like just like looking through you.
Now it's December again. It's a time for reflection and understanding. And in the spirit of the season, I decided to reach out to a kind stranger in the hope that they could perhaps help me discover the true meaning of dead eyes.
Yes, Virginia, they do exist. I'm looking at them right now.
Well, now this is the thing. When you said you love the podcast, and then you said that you looked up some photographs of me online.
Yeah.
And you said he actually does kind of have dead eyes.
Did I say that when I didn't know that you would hear it?
Yes.
This was my first time talking with Nikki. And it wasn't my intent to ambush her or to make her regret having said anything about me. I've enjoyed watching her tear into celebrities with surgical precision at numerous roasts, so I knew that she would not backpedal or try to spare my feelings.
I didn't want to look it up right away because I wanted to feel like I got to know you, and then I could make an assessment, not wanting to see. I wanted Tom Hanks to be wrong.
But maybe Tom Hanks wasn't wrong. And maybe this is something that I needed to hear from a person who wasn't afraid to look me in the eyes and tell me the truth.
Before Tom Hanks had brought it up, and maybe let's even say after and before you became public with Tom Hanks saying that you had dead eyes, had you received this feedback in any other way aside from the roles that you were cast in?
No, that's the thing. It was a one-shot deal. I only ever got it that day and never again.
Until now.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
My name is Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 21 years ago, I was fired by Tom Hanks. The reason, I was told at the time, he had looked at my audition tape and he thought that I had dead eyes.
You know, I thought this was going to be Tom on a bad day, but I did see what he meant. I mean, that's the kind of comment from the king of show business, like the person we all revere more than anything in the world. He's it.
And that's the short version.
You have clam eyes.
Clam eyes. Now, what does that mean?
Like, most people's eyes close, the lid comes down from the top, like a garage door.
Right.
Your garage door comes up from both ends in the middle, like you're a singing clam in The Little Mermaid. Like, you have clam eyes.
Am I going to have to rebrand now? Clam eyes. I don't know if that's better or worse.
It's a spinoff. Here's what I feel like dead eyes comes from. I feel like you have the eyes that when you make eye contact with someone who maybe has things inside them they aren't ready to share even with themselves, or maybe they're keeping from the general public. Mm-hmm. There's something about your gaze that makes that person feel, you know. You see them. And I think that dead eyes might be a deflection for someone who just doesn't want to be seen as much as they feel like you might see through them.
Oh.
If that makes any sense. Like, there's just a intensity that you can see into the soul.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm Connor.
Hi, Tony.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, thanks for letting us come in and do this. Recently, I went and got new glasses at the Warby Parker store in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. This was back before they became a sponsor of the podcast, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's just genuinely the place where I go to get my glasses. And I have to admit that I sort of had an agenda going in. I thought, well, maybe if I ask them to let me record my store visit, they'll end up buying ads on the podcast. which is exactly what happened.
No. Can you put those on for me for a second? I want to see how these look to start. Oh, those are cool, actually.
This is one of the sales associates, Alex.
Let's kind of open you up. Let me grab the gray Roosevelts. I'll be back in a sec.
The last time I got new glasses was about 4 years ago.
What's keyhole?
I don't wear them most of the time. I'm nearsighted, so I use them on the rare occasions when I need to drive a car. I'll use them when I watch TV or go to the movies, but that's about it. Normally, when I'm just walking around, everything close to me looks clear and crisp, and everything that's even a little bit distant is kind of a blur, which I'm fine with.
Did they tell you what the premise of my podcast is?
You were fired for having dead eyes, allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're trying to cover those up with some sunglasses? Or?
I mean, if need be, yeah. Yeah.
The one part they wouldn't let me tape was the eye exam, because they said that would be a HIPAA violation, even though I'm 99% sure you can record your own doctor visits and release them if you want to. So all I can do is tell you what the doctor said. There is nothing unusual about my eyes. My prescription changed by 25%. To clarify, I asked if this meant that my vision had gotten 25% better, and they confirmed that it was now slightly worse. And when I asked the doctor if she'd ever heard the term dead eyes, she laughed, said no, she hadn't, and sent me back out to the sales floor to pick out new frames.
How would you describe these eyes if you had to? You see eyes all the time. You're always looking at eyes.
I wouldn't say lifeless. I wouldn't say they're dead, but...
But you wouldn't say they aren't. Mm. You sound like you're halfway.
How would you describe my eyes?
Vibrant.
Vibrant. Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Adding that to my resume. Thank you.
Well, because I feel like you're very expressive.
By the way, Warby Parker Associates are not experts.
I mean, but the person doing the exam has to be, right?
Oh, okay,
the
okay. Yes, you're right. You're right. An eye doctor. Okay.
It wasn't
okay,
just the sales floor person. okay. Now, how do you feel about your own eyes? Like, how do you describe your own eyes? Do you feel like...
Dude, I think I'm projecting a little bit. If I don't have makeup on, my eyes can kind of just look lifeless and dare I say, dead. I think that when I am on, I have to, like, really make a concerted effort to, like, turn them on and, like, convey kindness. And, like, if I put down my guard, you can see everything. You can see all my fears, all my insecurities, anxieties. That's why acting for me is not something I like to really do, because I feel like I can't keep it up. Like, I can't keep those eyes alive. And, like, when I'm doing reality programming or podcasting or even comedy, like, there's an honesty to it that I can bring my dead eyes into and people won't get mad, because that's what I'm expected to do, is be more real.
Yeah.
Have you considered it has something to do with the fact that your eyes don't show expression? Like, there's not, you don't smile with your eyes. When Tyra Banks is saying smize, like, smile for me right now. Okay, there's something still piercing about those pupils. It's the iris in the pupils.
Right.
They just cut through it.
I do not profess to be an expert on the emotional interpretation of the eyes or the face. However... However, I scribbled down a few words.
At precisely the moment when I was seeking a specific level of expertise, I received an email from someone in the United Kingdom.
So, dead eyes. What's the emotion of dead eyes? If somebody says, you have dead eyes, what comes to mind to me? I immediately think a lack of warmth, lack of humanity, no connection, being withdrawn, vacant, unreactive, staring, tired. Lack of energy. I think that just about covers it.
That's pretty rough. That's a pretty rough list.
It's a rough list. And but what I liked was...
You might think from the sound of it that he's a poet or a dramaturg. But no, he's not. Not professionally, at least.
My name is Danny Morrison. It's Mr. Danny Morrison. I'm a consultant, ophthalmic surgeon, and ophthalmic plastic surgeon.
Which is the fancy way to say he's an eye surgeon. But you'll notice that he didn't call himself Dr. Danny Morrison. He said Mr. He signed his first email to me the same way. But he is an actual doctor. He has all the degrees and a ton of letters that go after his name. The reason he goes by Mr. instead of Doctor is something that I learned dates back to a time in the UK when surgeons were not considered worthy of the title Doctor.
100, 150 years ago, they were frowned upon because they were brutal. They did butchery. They did crude surgery. But then modern anesthesia came in the beginning of the 20th century. So the surgeons became the sort of semi-elite and they were very much admired. But of course, they continued to adopt the title.
So basically, when being a surgeon became a more prestigious profession, they were like, fuck you, we don't want to be called doctors. They kept the Mr. or Miss or Mrs. or Ms. It was their way of taking back what was once a put down, which is an impulse I can relate to.
That is absolutely what it is.
Danny and I spoke about eyes for almost 2 hours. We both had a lot of opinions. Mine were not as founded in science.
I think there's something mysterious about the eyes. I feel like, whether this is true or not, I feel like if you show me, like, bones, I understand bones. Even if you show me, like, yep, a heart, I get it. They seem so simple. There's something mysterious about an eye. It's made of different material than everything else.
Absolutely.
If you were going to make a human body, it feels like that would be the part you'd have to, like, special order from a completely different company.
That's a really good way of putting it. And, of course, I like the idea of the eyes being special as an eye specialist. There is something unusual. Maybe it's because it's one of those key senses. It's where we start when we look at somebody, when we talk to somebody. It's so much more than an organ.
Danny went to medical school at Sheffield University, where he was initially planning on becoming an obstetrician-gynecologist. That changed when he attended his ophthalmology lectures.
The people that taught ophthalmology in the eye, they were like a double act. And they would come in and they would just leave the students in stitches. And so that
there also seemed to be a relative calm that came with the eye doctors he was observing.
I think I was a fourth or fifth year student. We were anesthetizing people having eye surgery. And I was looking at what they were doing and they were sitting down. This is not what I saw in general surgery theaters, where people are shouting, they had their hands covered in blood, they're throwing instruments around. And here in the eye theater, there's calm. They're just talking. They're doing really delicate movements. There's hardly any blood involved. And so I ended up thinking, okay, this seems quite a cool thing to do.
When Danny first reached out to me, he was emphatic on one particular point. In his 30 years as a medical doctor, he has never heard anyone use the term dead eyes.
Not once. Never.
But you've worked with eyes that are dead?
Yep. So I want you to imagine you're in the dissection room and they split the class into two halves. So maybe you've got 75 students in a room in groups of six. Each one is around a dead body. I should say a cadaver rather than a dead body. We say cadaver. And therefore, you're in a room with 30 bodies lying on metal trolleys. And you're walking around the room chatting to your friends, saying, oh, what are you doing there? Oh, yeah, I'm doing the abdomen. Oh, what are you doing here? Oh, I'm just doing something on the face. What are you up to? Oh, yeah, I'm just looking inside the ears. I'm just about to cut them off. So that's one's first exposure in training to people who are not alive. Later on, as a medical doctor, you will see people die. When I was doing accident and emergency, people come in from cardiac arrest, they're brought in by an ambulance and you go into the back of the ambulance and you have to pronounce them as dead. And of course, we also see people actually die in front of you, unfortunately. So a cardiac arrest, if it's unsuccessful, you've seen this on TV, you've seen these dramas, everybody's around the bed, everybody's pumping on the chest, and you see somebody's life expire before your eyes. And so, yes, people who've been long dead, people who have been dead for hours, and people dying in front of you.
So what happens? Do you notice a difference in the physical eye itself? I mean, what is different?
It depends how long that individual has not been living for. So let's assume you have somebody who's died 2 or 3 hours ago, just lying in a room waiting to be taken away, you know, have the sheet put over their face and so on. If the eyes are open, the first thing one will notice is that the cornea, the clear window in the eye, has lost its sheen. So it has a dullish appearance. And that's because it starts to dehydrate. And because you lose the clarity of the cornea, the colour starts to go. It's like having a dirty windscreen. And when you talk to somebody, your eyes make small movements. We call them microcicades. Left and right, they jerk very, very slightly. as somebody's talking. They'll often be analyzing whatever they're looking at or somebody's face. Dead eyes, they don't move. And of course, the other thing that happens is the pupil enlarges. So you see less of the colored part of the eye, which of course is why when people come to check if somebody's dead or alive, they shine a torch in their eyes to see if the pupils are reacting. And of course, if you're brain dead, the pupils don't react. They become fixed and dilated. It's one of the recognizable signs of death. So over hours and days, the eyeball will start to shift back into the socket, which makes the eyes slightly sunken.
I feel like I have slightly deep set eyes, and I don't know if that would be something that would factor into it.
I've looked at your face. I've also looked at Tom Hanks's face. I mean, why wouldn't you? And your eyebrows are lower than normal, lower than one would expect. They've descended slightly. And I don't mean just from age. That's part of your face. Now, that's the first thing. So your eyebrows are lower.
Danny went on to give me a pretty detailed analysis of my physical facial characteristics. The main points were that my eyebrows are lower and my forehead is more prominent and sort of pushing forward.
Hence the term deep set. Because you know when you set a jewel in its mount, going back to what you said earlier, you create a human being, you'd set the eyes in the face, wouldn't you? Well, yours, when they came back from the shop, they set yours back a bit further. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I've got some good news for you, because I'm going to tell you about some other people who also have deep-set eyes. Okay? And this is where you feel good about yourself.
Great, I'm ready.
Because there are two male actors who have deep-set eyes, Tom Cruise and Robert Pattinson. You're in good company.
All right.
I'm going to flatter you some more. Emma Watson of Harry Potter fame. Her eyebrows have descended and she has a slightly prominent forehead. So, as you can see, these features are not confined to anybody who's described as not nice to look at or not good-looking or not attractive.
Right.
So how do you feel about that?
I mean, I feel pretty good about it, I think. You know, I'm not kidding myself, you know.
Okay. So I thought, you know what, I need to have a look at Tom Hanks. He's got fairly light-coloured eyes. I can't see a description of what colour they are. Maybe they're green. But his eyes would not be described as deep-set.
Mm-hmm.
However, what got interesting was when I looked at Adam Sims, because Adam Sims, who went on to play Zelinsky, I would describe his eyes as being mildly deep-set.
So we can't say we've solved it just in that it's deep-set eyes, because it's going from deep-set to slightly less deep-set.
Yeah.
I mean, if that is the resolution, it's a fairly subtle one.
I think so.
Could that be it? Could that be the answer, that my eyes are too deep-set? It doesn't seem likely. But it did feel nice to hear Mr. Dr. Danny Morrison flattering my eyes and comparing me to movie stars, especially after Nikki said I look like a sociopath. But maybe this was something that conventional modern medicine wasn't equipped to explain. Maybe the answers I was seeking existed on a different plane of experience, beyond the merely physical. In a moment, we attempt to open up the windows to my soul. Clam Eyes will be right back.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery
starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So when you look at my eyes, you don't see power or efficiency.
That's right. It's eyes and face and body, like, and there's some way I'm generally being aware of energy, but primarily it's eyes. If I can't see someone's eyes, I'm not as accurate.
This is Lorelei Shamayo. She is about to do something she calls an intuitive eye reading. The idea is that she will look into my eyes and, in her words, read the energy shining through them, with the promise that I will feel immediately, deeply, and fully seen like never before.
My passion is to help people find new ways of seeing and honoring who they are and expressing who they are in the world, doing it in a way where they find joy and fulfillment and they feel energized, and then making choices of who to do that with in a way that's honoring other people.
Lorelei has a master's degree from Caltech. She started out working as a geneticist and molecular biologist, but then she made a change. She now works directly with people as a coach, a consultant, and personality assessor.
Some of what this comes from is the idea that eyes are a window to the soul. We usually don't think about that until we can't see someone's eyes. So if they're wearing dark sunglasses or something like that, right, their eyes are blocked. The moment they take them off, bang, like we have so much more awareness of them.
I sent Lorelei some photographs of my face to study in advance, and now she's looking at me over Zoom, studying the shape of my eyes and their movements while we talk.
We've evolved as humans so that our brains just pick up so much about each other, similar to mirror neurons in the brain that pick up feelings and emotions in other people that give us, it seems like, an experience that the other person might be having. But our brains pick all that stuff up, and I think that we pick up a ton about each other, including aspects of what you might call soul. If one's not spiritual and one doesn't think of soul, personality. So I use a set of archetypes to describe a person's soul, like what we see in each other.
Lorelei's system involves observing my eyes and then categorizing their qualities into 3 out of 7 possible personality traits, which she calls talents.
They describe what we naturally value and contribute, what energizes us, how we feel joy, and how we can potentially make the biggest contribution in the world. And I describe each person as having 3, and they come in an order of priority.
So let's get to my reading, because I'm looking at my spreadsheet and I need to know what it means.
Yeah, let me share my screen, because this will make more sense.
The 7 talents each have a corresponding archetype, like warrior or priest, priestess, and you get the idea. And the 3 traits Lorelei saw in my eyes were artisan, scholar, and sage.
Right, so artisan being about freedom, creativity. Scholar is about knowledge. And then I think you've got sage, right? So sage is about humor, playfulness, fun, right? Community, the interaction of people together in community, right? So I think that's you. And they come in an order.
So basically creative and smart and funny, good at communicating. Which, okay, I should say here that I'm not a particularly reliable test subject for this process because I'm an actor and a comedian. I don't remember the last time I turned down a compliment.
Initially, scholars, they don't share their opinions, they don't share their feelings or emotions. So they can be more flat for other people. They can appear to have dead eyes.
But Lorelei also had something to say which took me by surprise. Not about my own eyes, but about the eyes of Tom Hanks.
So ironically, Tom Hanks has the same 3 talents as you.
Artisan, scholar, sage. After all this, what if Tom Hanks and I had the same eyes?
Sometimes we actually get repulsed by people that are like us. Right? There's like a competitive thing and a repulsion.
So in a way, when he was rejecting me, he was rejecting himself.
Right. He's rejecting part of himself.
I mean, that might be why he hasn't come on the podcast yet.
Yeah. And it might be more real and vulnerable and raw than he's willing to be.
I truly didn't expect it to have as direct an impact on like, oh, yeah, of course, Tom Hanks was looking at my eyes and he basically did an intuitive eye reading without having the terminology or the classification of it, just the instinctive aspect of like, there's something I'm rejecting here.
Yeah.
you have developed a system where you can put a name to, well, this is why this and this is why that. But for most people, it's just a thing of like yes or no.
Right. They just have a gut instinct and they don't know why.
As a devout agnostic, I tend to veer between skepticism and wanting to believe in things. And I wanted to believe that Lorelei was right. But the skeptical part of me was highly aware that the seven talents are all kind of nice things to be told about yourself. And as with Mr. Dr. Danny, I realized that I was very susceptible to flattery. Being told I'm funny and creative and a good communicator, these are all things that I like to hear, and there was nothing that was really at odds with my ideal perception of myself. For instance, it would have been a red flag for me if Lorelei had told me that one of my talents was warrior. I'm not a warrior.
Clearly, you know, Band of Brothers.
She said that Tom Hanks and I had the same talents, and that oftentimes we will be repelled by, like, hearing your own voice on tape. It's sort of like if something feels like it's the same as you.
Subconsciously, he was threatened by you.
I've certainly been in audition rooms where I look around and see a bunch of actors who were all up for the same part and we all kind of look alike. And I definitely don't like that feeling. Like, I look at all the other actors, I'm like, I hate these guys. And it really is like, oh, I'm seeing what I don't like about myself.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much life. You know, anything that upsets you, you can always figure out, oh, it's because it reminds me of something I don't like about myself. So I think your eyes make people feel seen. Like, you see through the bullshit. You know what's really up. And it's uncomfortable. I wonder if you had those eyes as a child. What did you look like as a child?
I'm going to send you, I think, three photographs of me as a kid.
Oh, boy. Okay. Oh. Okay, you got your dead eyes from your mom. She's such a cutie, and they do not appear dead within her skull. So what we have here is that she has taken the dead eyes look, and with the shaping of her eyebrows, her face in general, her smile, there's a sincerity to them that does not lead me to believe that she would drown raccoons for fun. You, however, as a baby, I'm not seeing the dead eyes in this first photo. Oh, and then you as a little magician, no dead eyes. What a cutie. You've got the clam eyes. We see the bottom parts of the shell there. Mm-hmm. And then we have this final one. And that is, I'm zooming in on it slowly as if it were a Dateline story about, this was around the age Connor started spending a lot more time in the woods murdering kittens. Yeah, it was there. That's when it appeared. And when I say that your mom has the dead eyes, that's where you're getting your eyeballs from your mom. The catatonic stare, that's from some other realm that only you know in your soul where that comes from.
What I'll really concede in that particular photograph is I'm looking at a photo of myself, and I feel like that kid is looking right into my soul. Like, I feel like that kid knows everything about me.
That's it, dude. You get it. You see it finally. There's something that child knows and has seen. And he liked what he saw. It fueled him.
I do feel like we've reached something here that is a kind of acceptance or an acknowledgement, as opposed to like trying to, because I mean, medically, I feel like I've disproven it in the sense that like I've gotten essentially two doctors to sign off and say he doesn't have dead eyes.
Yeah.
So in the medical community, that means something. But artistically, creatively, in the world that I inhabit or travel in, playing creeps and weirdos and sociopaths, those are usually some of the best parts and more fun in some ways than other parts.
A lot of things I struggle with about my looks and that I've fought against over the years, and things that have been brought to light from me doing roasts and people saying the meanest thing possible.
Yeah.
I know that I'm still deserving of love. And I think that you're in a place in your life where I can be honest with you and say, yeah, there's a dead eye vibe. But you know that doesn't make you less lovable. Does it suggest that you're not capable of love and feeling love? Certainly. Does that mean... But I think based on your gaze, I feel like you're someone who can... I feel comfortable being honest with you. You've spun something incredible out of your dead, lifeless, sociopathic eyes.
I really respect the fact that you, in conversation with me, you've held firm to your convictions. I do feel on some level that arriving at that place of acceptance, I think that is a kind of Deadeye's miracle in the holiday sense of it, you know, the in searching for the true meaning of Deadeye's.
I want to say yes because I'm looking you in the eyes right now and I just want to give you whatever you want so that you don't do whatever I think you might do to me someday.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. It's a Deadeye's Christmas miracle.
In the classic poem A Visit from St. Nicholas by Clement Clark Moore, commonly known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, when Santa Claus comes down the chimney, we are told about his eyes, how they twinkled. Far from dead, obviously. Moments later, a wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. Which sounds like basically the opposite of the impression I had made in my visit with Nikki. But more importantly, in my effort to find greater clarity in the meaning of dead eyes, I think what I stumbled upon was that if someone thinks I have dead eyes, that's just something I'm going to have to embrace. Because I can't change it. I cannot control it. The best I can do is to narratively mold it. And try as I might to fight through my confusion, the thing I can't find is a solid conclusion. A wrap-up, a takeaway tied with a ribbon, a clear and kind message with lessons for living. My eyes are alive, they're alive as can be, though it's up for debate and you might disagree. And while it is tempting to say it's a gift to have knowledge of self, it makes me feel like shit. In truth, though, on balance, it does make me happy to talk about all the ways showbiz is crappy. So for the time being, this serves as an ending, because once I start rhyming, there's no use pretending that I have got anything left in the tanks or any fresh musings about Thomas Hanks. For now, happy holidays, and if you please, stay safe and be smart in pandemic year 3. I bid you farewell now. I'm off to relax and to watch Band of Brothers on HBO Max.
I think your eyes are a gift. Akin to coal, nevertheless a gift.
Oh, two lumps of coal in my eye sockets.
There's more life in two lumps of coal. Oh. Frosty the Snowman has more depth of character in his eyes than you do, but that doesn't mean you aren't deserving of love. And there's always voice acting.
There's no bright star leading where
Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff, it's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite. Our associate producer is Jordan Allen, with production assistance from Megan Sarnacki. Special thanks to my guests, Nikki Glazer, Dr. Mr. Danny Morrison, Lorelei Shamayo, Alex and everyone at the Warby Parker store in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and to Polly Kemp, as the voice of The Guardian. Also thanks to Amy Mann and Ted Leo, a.k.a. The Both, for letting us use this song that's playing in the background. It's called You're a Gift,
and it can currently be found on most major music streaming platforms. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter at Dead Eyes Podcast, and talk about us nicely on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is deadeyespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about this show, especially if you are friends with Tom Hanks, whose aforementioned 2004 film, The Polar Express, I finally saw for the first time this year. I had been putting it off for a while. And yes, I agree, sure, the eyes look a little weird, but let's put that to the side so that I may recite the following words from the film, which require no additional context and are admittedly stuck in my head now. Here we only got one rule. Never, ever let it cool. Keep it cooking in the pot. Soon you got hot chocolate. Thanks for listening. Be smart. Stay safe. Happy holidays.
That's a guy that if he was at your door, you'd go, I can't let you in. I'm sorry. I know that you're saying you're the maintenance man, but like, I can't trust you. I think age is going to really behoove you because it suggests to me you can't run as fast and strangle me as hard, which your dead eyes would suggest you're plotting to do at some point. I think that everyone needs a little break. When you put on sunglasses, do you feel like you know, dogs are friendlier? Like,
I like having sunglasses on. I like it a lot.
Yeah, so do we. Maybe it has something to do with your blue eyes.
What do you think of like an actor like Paul Newman who had like legendarily piercing blue eyes? Like, is he just so handsome that it's okay or that it's becomes a feature?
His brow didn't furrow over them in a way in which yours does that suggests you've plotted, you know, deaths. Have you looked into like plastic surgery? Have there been things that make you go, maybe I'll try makeup or anything to take this down? Maybe a colored contact, maybe just like an eye patch on or removing them. So you're not meant to be in a Tom Hanks movie. And that's it. Or there probably is a place for you in one. If he ever, you know, does another prison drama.
Right. A sequel to the Green Mile.
Yeah, I think he would have been perfect for something like that. Just the guy in the cell that just has been in solitary for 45 years,
right,
and lost any kind of conception of what it's like to socialize and make people feel at ease with your gaze. And I am zooming in to the point where your whole face, like your eyes are just my screen. Truly terrifying. I think I'm going to put it as my backdrop for my phone so that because I've been wanting a way to use my phone less. Every time I pick it up, I'll just throw my phone and shatter it. The most terrifying thing I can imagine is sharing a bed with you in the morning and like rolling over and you're doing that lover's gaze where you just watch your lover sleep. And then you wake up in the morning, you open your eyes and like your lover's like looking at you and you go, oh my God, he loves me so much. He watches me sleep. I would shriek, kick the sheets and be awoken in a way that I could never forgive you. And it would ruin everything. Do you do clear when you travel?
What is that?
It's like the almost TSA pre. Like you look into a machine, they scan your eyes, and then it gets you in. I would avoid that. Those machines are expensive, and you don't want to be liable for what you do to that machine. If I got into an elevator with you, I might turn on my like find my friends location and just let my friends know. You know, I would put you as a romantic interest in a movie.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Like the Fear, if they remake that.
If they remake Fear.
That was a HeadGum original.